You are listening to Lavender
Gaze.
Hi.
Hey, Erica.
Hey, what's up?
Okay, so we're live with Lavender Gaze.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Hello, Lavender Gaze.
Hi. Hi, Erica. I'm Britt.
I'm Sam.
Our guest is Erica Rose, filmmaker and artist. She is the co-creator and co-director of the Lesbian Bar Project, which is Emmy and GLAAD award-winning documentary celebrating lesbian queer bars. And we're so excited to have you.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat with you two and, you know, get to know you two better and for your audience to get to know me.
Yes, exactly. We are so excited to get to know you. And I feel like a lot of our listeners may have seen the Lesbian Bar Project, and we know there's a lot of content out about that project. And I feel like all of our listeners should go. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it. And if you haven't watched it, you should look up some of the statistics that are out about that, because it's really, really impressive and cool what you did. But what we want to focus on today is you and your life as a filmmaker and queerness and art and working in the industry and what all that is like for you. So I guess the first question here is, like, how, baby Erica, like, how did you get into filmmaking? Was this always something you knew you were into? And like, how did that begin for you? You grew up outside of Boston, is that right?
Yes. Okay. I grew up, for the listeners that know, I grew up in Massachusetts. That is home to such talented Jewish people like John Krasinski and BJ Novak.
Cool.
And yes, I hope that I, you know, they kind of have their own reputations, and I hope that mine is not negative in any regard. But yeah, it's like a very, you know, it's kind of like liberal, a lot of Jewish people in the suburb, and it has the highest concentration of therapists. I think the world. Yeah. And both of my parents are therapists.
Oh,
so
whoa.
I think that royally fucked me up. But in all honesty, it was actually really great, because when I had an issue with a classmate, my mom was like, don't worry, that person is mean to you because she has a personality disorder and she can't help it. And, you know, it gave me like a massive vocabulary by the time I was in middle school. And, but in all seriousness, it's actually, my parents were great, and they really encouraged just this kind of dialogue and dissection of the human condition. And my dad wrote a lot of textbooks on human sexuality, so I kind of had this plethora of experience and just engagement with the world in a way that kind of encouraged me to ask questions and to study people. And that's really what filmmaking and especially directing is. It's just like a study of people. And I think that's how my fascination began. And I've always just been this natural storyteller. If anyone that knows me can tell you that I'm a ham, I'm always the person at the party telling all the stories. And I think that I've been doing that since I was very young. And I fell in love with film because it was my portal and access to the world in a way that I was always like, this sounds pretentious when I say it, but I really don't mean it to be pretentious, because it's much sadder. But I really like, I was like not super interested in a lot of like children's stuff. I like read The Bell Jar when I was really young, like when I was like in fifth grade, and I had no censorship. So I would just like be in my basement watching HBO, like Real Sex or like you know, a Wong Kar Wai film. I know. And I would always have my hand on the remote just in case my mom did come downstairs, and I would like immediately change the channel. So my, yeah, I like, you know, had basically carpal tunnel by the time I was in high school, because my thumb was like always like glued to that remote.
Oh my God.
Not but good for
I really
being
knew.
Gay.
Yeah, not great. Not great. Yeah, thank God I was able to stretch that out when I moved to New York. Yeah, I was able to, you know, there's some physical therapy. But yeah, so I was always really into storytelling and film, and my dad really encouraged me. Like, he was like, you need to know like the Scorsese collection, like of his films from the 70s and 80s. And so we like watched that growing up, and I didn't have like formal film education when I was younger, but what I did is that I just devoured everything I could. I would basically spend hours reading like IMDb and would just like study like what I could. And then I got all these film books that really just like taught me about like international film. And I just kind of taught myself and then applied to NYU and got into their film school. So that was just kind of like the beginning. And there was a time period for about a couple months. I had convinced myself, oh, maybe I shouldn't be a director because there was no women directors that I knew of besides like Penny Marshall. And that was a really, you know, insidious, internalized misogyny, like thought process that I had, because I really did want to direct, but I had told myself that it wasn't possible from a place of a lot of like self-esteem issues. And I was like, oh, I'll be like a film critic or film, you know, write about film and film journalist. And I was doing that for my like school newspaper and I was enjoying it. But then I said to myself, and this is no shade to any film critics, you know, there are obviously trolls, but for the Pauline Kaels of the world, like I do respect that art form. But I said to myself, I don't want to be someone who is writing about other people's art for the rest of my life. I want to be that person putting myself on the line and making art. And so I scrapped that and invested in myself and my work and just kind of overcame my own self-esteem and anxiety issues. And then, yeah, applied to NYU and got in.
That's
the beginning.
What was the pivotal moment that allowed you to have that confidence to say, you know what, I am going to do this. This is what I want to do.
That's a good question. I don't remember a specific moment. I think that I actually was really just studying more. And I, you know, found out about filmmakers like Jane Campion and Mira Nair and Katsumine Brayat and a bunch of other women who were actually fucking doing it. And I think I just had this moment that it kind of crystallized for me that I was like, oh, I don't want to be someone who lives and does things out of fear. And I think that I wanted to be someone who like took a chance. And it was like, you know, and I think I realized that it was kind of now or never. And I mean, that sounds like so dramatic. It really wasn't. Like I could have like gone down one path. I was only like 17. But yeah. I think I told myself that it was now or never. And it kind of gave me the motivation to be like, oh no, you can do this. And I think that I, you know, needed to invest in myself and develop some main character energy, as the kids say today.
Yeah.
So that was, I think that when I got to film school, I wish I could go back in time. I mean, I don't like to live in regret, but there was one regret I have is like to be okay that I don't know everything. I think that because I felt this pressure to like, I'm a perfectionist and I like to be the best at whatever I do. And I wanted to come into this environment that I knew was going to be highly competitive and very male dominated and be like, I can compete with you. And instead, I wish I had just accepted that this was a learning environment and that I was going to be infiltrated with new information. I didn't know everything and kind of approached it more as a sponge and left with, and I think I just would have been like happier in the beginning. And I think that I was just really hard on myself. And I think there's some humbling moments where I was like, you know, you really don't know much. And I was able to kind of just like form really good relationships with the professors. And I made like friends and decided I don't need to know, you know, every fucking production company that has an overall deal with like a certain studio by the time that I'm like a junior in college. Mm-hmm. Like this is like time to just like experiment and be weird. And I really like shifted in sophomore year of college where I was like making just like films that I would want to see. And I didn't, it was very liberating. There was like a turning point where I was like, fuck it, I'm going to make like weird sex movies on 16mm and just like have a blast. And I kind of like became known as that girl, but I didn't care. I was like, fuck it. Like, I'm just going to like make things that I want to see. And that's what I did.
Yeah. No, that's amazing. I was just going to say like, that's so real, that desire to like prove yourself, especially when you are like someone who's like not seen other people like you, like doing the thing that you're doing. So you have that extra thing where you almost feel like you have like responsibility to be like, I want to be the one that can show the world that like, I can do this and people like me can do this. So I totally like hear that like feeling, and I also can see how that also might limit your ability to like experiment and do the things that other people exactly like. We do see a lot of the same type of movies over and over. And so to have people experimenting and making little weird sex movies
those
on film.
Like, sex movies. But not just a sex movie, but I think I want to hear more about that, like making shit that you want to make. Cause like when I look at what you've made, right? And like even, you know, the things that like everybody listening probably has seen or heard of, I see like what Sam and I talk about. It's like you're making stuff for gay people and you're, you know, being a gay person yourself. That's really cool. That's really interesting. And I think there's a lot of gay people maybe making things for the heteronormative society. Like maybe they're catering to like the masses. And I don't know if you have any.
Or yeah. Or what we're told the masses want. Or,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
we have this conversation all the time, Brett and I, where we're literally. Like, we feel like actually like people think that gay content is like only for like gay people to enjoy. Mm-hmm. But like anyone can relate to like a love story. You know, and there may be elements that like are not of someone's experience, but they can still like watch it. And like, and we think that actually like secretly people like are more into
gay stuff.
Yeah, because it's like new. Mm-hmm. There, it's a new perspective. It's not something that's been told over and over and over and over.
Yeah.
Again.
Or just everything is like kind of gay coded, like all the good art anyway.
Yeah. We've also had this conversation too.
Yeah. Well, I think that anything, straight people try to steal from gay culture because we're just inherently more interesting and provocative in a great way.
Yeah.
So anytime they need something a little saucy, they're like, okay, like, let's make it queer coded.
Yeah. Yes.
But no, I mean, when I made my film Girl Talk in 2018, that was like when we went on the festival circuit with it. I had a lot of conversations with people from many different backgrounds and identities. And even if they weren't like a queer woman, they really related to the film because it just is a story about intimacy. And I think that anyone who has encountered, you know, kind of like questioning the disparity between emotional and physical intimacy, they could relate to the film. And I think that that's like why film is my favorite art form, because it is a bridge to different experiences and encourages dialogue and conversation. And I think that, you know, I don't think it's like my job to educate people, but I think it's my job to like tell stories in a way where you can empathize with the characters and, you know, figure out more things about yourself as an audience member. And that's like my experience of watching movies. I watch something and I'm like, oh, I get to learn about other people's experiences, other parts of the world, other, you know, whatever, and also get to learn more about myself. And I think that's really what the power of movies are. And that's why it's a punishing and difficult industry, but that's why at the end of the day, it's like, there's nothing else I would rather be doing.
Yeah.
So cool.
Oh, totally. For sure. I feel like media and queer media specifically in my life has had like a really big impact. Like it does, as you're saying, like open your world up. And it really did that for me. And I feel like I have had like movies or things that I remember watching and being like, whoa, like actually this is speaking to a part of me that I didn't even know like existed. And and that moment, those moments are always really beautiful, and do like that is like the power of art. And so I guess like, do you remember having any like moments like that where you're watching something, you're maybe watching a film and it's like speaking to you in a way, like a defining like queer moment in your film education?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's been so many, but I think the one that like really sticks out is the movie Talk to Her, also called Hablé con Ella, Almodovar's movie from 2002.
Cool.
And yeah, for those who don't know it, it's about two men who both are in love with two women who are in comas. And it's really about kind of like what happened to the women and basically kind of the stories we tell ourselves and displaced on other people in the narrative we kind of create with other people to kind of service ourselves, even if they don't necessarily exist. And for me, the film is actually kind of talking about, it's referencing what we've been talking about, that the film, you know, there are queer characters and it is queer, but it's not explicitly, it's more queer coded rather than specifically queer. And Almodovar is a queer filmmaker. But there's this like moment in the film that is just really, it's just mind blowing. And it's the moment when you realize that, and I don't want to give it away, but I think, I feel like people should just watch it. And that movie really changed my life. Actually, I think it was watching that movie that made me realized that I don't want to just be like a film critic. Like I need to be making art. I think it was actually watching that film. I was in high school and it really changed my life because it kind of like, it just kind of like rewrote the rules of like what a movie can be. Wow. And watching that, I was like, that to me is like telling this like really, you know, it's about these like forbidden desires. It's about this like longing. And I think for me, I felt like, you know, I was coming to terms with my own queerness. And I felt like, you know, I actually was talking about this with someone the other day because I was like, I basically had admitted to myself when I was around like 8 years old that I was gay, but I kind of repressed it. Yeah. I remember you know, admitting it to myself. And I was like, oh, you know, like I'm gay, but I don't want to be. And I knew that because it was like a classmate of mine had just had a presentation about his two moms, which was awesome. And I also knew just like from my dad and his work that I knew what being gay was, but I also like carried the social stigma of it. And I was like, I don't want to be that. That's not me. And so I really repressed it. And I think what I did instead of, because like anytime I would see like two women like kissing or being intimate on screen in like middle school and high school, I would just immediately run away from it because I was like afraid to be like turned on by it.
That's real.
So what I did is that, is that I actually like doubled down and like really just invested in gay male queer stories because that was the only, that felt safer to me because it wasn't directly about me, but I was always really drawn to it. And I think like watching Almodovar's work or watching like Todd Haynes' work or Dustin and Brunt's work, I was able to see like, and I was watching like Queer as Folk and everything. And it's like, I was, Yeah, when like Brian like rims Justin in the pilot, like that taught me a lot.
learned a lot.
Yeah, learned some crucial moves. And yeah, I basically was like, oh, I should, this is like safer for me if I invest in these kind of stories rather than like incriminating myself because it wasn't with my gender. But then it was really when I got to college and kind of two things happened where one, a classmate of mine was like, you need to watch The L Word. And honestly, like, that show, especially, I mean, I think the OG season one and two are brilliant, especially season one.
Season one.
And we, I was like, we're big fans as well. We watch it all the time.
Yeah.
And rewatch it because those first,
and re-watch those first seasons,
you're right, are like, they're just so good.
They're so classic.
Yeah. It's just brilliant. And I think that it really changed my life. And I was addicted to it. I remember I like let myself indulge in this for like the first time in my life. And the entire, like looking back, like I had crushes on girls like the entire time I was in school. And I would have these like fantasies of like running away with my teacher, which is like the fucking gayest thing.
Oh my God.
Ever. Yeah.
I thought every queer
that's
person
so great. That's so great. Yeah. I relate.
Yeah. Classic.
Yeah.
So that's when you came out, was, like, and walked through The L Word?
In college.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Well, and then I had a straight roommate at the time, and I bought the box set, because of course, and then I was watching the box set, and there was, like, the scene where, like, Alice and Dana first have sex.
Oh, my God.
Two, episode five. Yeah, and of course, I think, like, it was, like, 23 minutes in. Like, that's how obsessed I was. And I remember we were watching it and I had pretended that I hadn't seen this episode already like five times. And then I basically like paused it after the scene and my roommate was like, oh, like, is everything okay? And I was like, oh, I like missed some like crucial plot developments. I think we need to rewind it and watch again. So, and she was like, okay. And then basically after I like, I came out with like bi, but like, you know, wasn't. And then I fell for like my, I met this like out lesbian who was like, she drove me crazy in a great way. And of course she rejected me royally, but she was like the first girl I let myself like really become obsessed with. And I was insane about her. And it's funny because nowadays, like if I met her, I would not be remotely interested, but like at the time she was like my world. And I like memorized exactly like what her schedule was. And like, and if she listened to this, she would think I'm fucking nuts, but she never knew this. But like, I would like look at, you know, be at places and like the lounge at convenient times. And
oh my God,
you know,
that's so real.
That's so gay. Wait, did you, did you ever like tell her that you were having these feelings?
Yeah. So basically what happened was we were working on a project together and she was an actor and I was directing it.
Oh my
God. Then of course I didn't do anything. I know, classic. And of course, I didn't do anything while we were working together, but the movie finished. And basically, yes. And I had a party at my apartment at the time. And basically, at one point, we were like talking in my room. And there was and this is a very cinematic moment. I was sitting on my bed, and instead of her sitting right next to me on the bed, she sat in the chair across from the bed. And that's when I knew it was over between us. I was like, she's not into it. Or it was over before it began. But yeah, like, it was devastating.
But did you ever say like what you're feeling, or you did?
I didn't have to, because okay, she kind of was like, oh, I'm going out to. Yeah. And she was like, I'm going out to a bar after this party.
Yeah.
And then she went out, and she had told some of my friends that she like knew I was interested and she wasn't. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. And I was like pretty devastated. And that was like right around the time that the movie Drive had just come out. And mm-hmm. I was like really obsessed with the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. So it was like that song Under Your Spell, like, so I like listened to that on repeat. But then I basically like, I think I got over it in like a week or two, and like okay. then okay. ended up meeting my first girlfriend. And yeah, I know. Well, I think for me, I like when someone's not interested in me, I'm like, well, you know, there's some parts of me that are like fucking self-hating, and I'm like, oh, why am I not good enough?
Yeah.
But then I like, usually I'm like, you know what? It's boring to like sit in the self-hate for so long. And I just went out and got another girlfriend. So I was like, fine. Yeah.
Good. Love that.
It was very formative. Yeah.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for sharing. That's like, I think a lot of people can relate to.
Totally.
At least at the beginning.
We all have one of those. Yeah. At least one.
At least one. And maybe more.
Yeah.
But yeah. And also having the L word be basically our support group for coming out. I know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It came out in like my senior year of high school. And my dad got Showtime, so I could watch it like as it came out. So I couldn't rewatch any episodes. Mm. I was like watching it live. But the first episode I watched with him, which was...
Oh, wow. No. You're an OG. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, it came out when you were a senior in high school. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're aging me. Yeah. Sam and I have a big age difference. No, it's okay. It's okay.
No, but
I'm coming to terms.
Britt and I watched the first season of The L Word like maybe a year and a half ago, and I hadn't seen it before.
I was like, you have to. It was kind of a requirement.
I will be honest. Like, I was a little bit like what you were saying. Like, I think I had stayed away from The L Word because I knew it was like so gay that it was just going to make me so gay that I would like never be able to turn back. And I like was not quite ready for it for a while.
Right. And look at you now.
And look at me now. I've never been gayer every day. But The L Word is a big part of that, because it is like, I watching it, I just was so like blown away that this thing came out like in the 2000s.
Mm.
And
right. I know. It really, yeah, changed everything.
It kind of reminds me of like the Lesbian Bar Project a little bit, and just like mm-hmm. how you're trying totally. To like preserve these spaces that, you know, are so vital to our community. Really cool. So happy you created that. Was yeah. that like your brainchild or partially?
Yeah. I mean, I started it with my dear friend, Alina Street. And basically when the pandemic hit, we were unemployed as filmmakers, and we kind of just like had a lot of time and space to reflect on the importance of our safe spaces. And this coincided, I found an article that from NBC out that was saying that there was only 16 lesbian bars left in the country, and that the pandemic could bring that number down to zero. And I called Alina and was like, did you know that our numbers were so bad? Like at that point I'd been out for, you know, a long time, and I didn't even, and was consider myself very ingrained in the queer community, and I didn't even know the numbers were so bad. Mm-hmm. So we basically, yeah, worked together in just like, you know, conceptualizing the Lesbian Bar Project as a docuseries. And we started relatively like humbly. We were like, okay, let's do it as like a 90-second PSA. And we made it branded, and we brought Leah DeLary on, and then we ended up, you know, wanting to do give back to the spaces philanthropically. So we raised our first year $117,000 for the bars, and our second year we raised $150,000 for the bars, which was really cool. And then we did like a short film, and then that short film helped us get our docuseries on Roku, which is free to watch for anyone.
Yeah, we finished it and loved it.
Yeah, I mean, we were just so excited, because when we started the project, there was only, yeah, like 16. And then in 2021, we discovered there was a couple more bars that we had left off our list, just because you know, no one had made a centralized list online before we had. Mm. And there's a couple bars that we missed. And then also more bars started opening up. So now we have 31 on the list, which is really cool. And it's growing and the demand is growing.
Amazing.
Yeah, which is really like...
Because we're out here recruiting. You know, we're trying to do our part to like...
Yes. Yes. I mean, I also think that like alcohol-free spaces are just like kind of more alcohol-free options as bars are like really important.
There's literally nowhere in San Francisco.
Wow, that's actually surprising.
Because like it is a pretty sober city, but no, there aren't any.
That's the hope, yeah. But yeah, I guess it's so cool to hear that you've like had so much like impact with your art too, because a lot of times like you make stuff and maybe if it is like, which is also amazing, but that you might not always know tangibly what the impact of what you created is. And you actually have like numbers to look at to be like, whoa, like,
that's so cool.
We raised this much money and we helped like this many people, which is amazing. So I guess another question, like, what's something that you believed was true about art or about the industry that you no longer believe anymore, that now that you've been working in the industry for a little while?
That success does not happen overnight. And that the parameters of success are ever evolving. And I think that success is a really personal definition. Like one has a very personal definition around success. And I think for me, I have been kind of spending my time chasing it and grasping it and have realized that success is something that is always just evolving. And I think part of being an artist is wrestling with the feeling of that it's never enough and it's never good enough. But I think it's healthy to an extent because it, for me personally, it motivates me to keep working hard and to keep challenging myself and challenging what I think I'm capable of. But it's also to be honest with myself and needing to be honest with myself that what I've done is enough and is good enough. And I think it's trying to incorporate that of being like, you know, this industry really is predicated on making people feel small and maybe making people feel like nothing and then suddenly making people feel like you are everything. And I think that's a really unhealthy disparity because I think for the most part, you're just in between. And I think that at the end of the day, you can have a lot of attention, you could have a lot of glamour, but it could be meaningless if you don't have it within. And I know that sounds cliche, but really true. And I think that spent a lot of time kind of searching for external validation and really that it's fleeting. And I think it really just has to come from yourself.
That's such a beautiful message in so many ways, not just from like a career perspective, but just like from a personal journey. I think I know that's like really resonating with me. I'm like, yeah, I'm on that journey myself. So
yeah, me too. And it's also, yeah, like any like young queer person who's like imagining their life too, like I think the parameters that we have for success and the ways that we define it are so like outdated and like built on, you know, like old paradigms that I think we're all trying to like kind of move past. And so to actually like open up the like exploratory nature of a journey of being an artist or doing whatever it is that you like want to do without having the like prescriptive like overhead feeling of like you should be doing this or like you're not worth anything if you don't succeed at this level of blah blah blah, I think is like also a disservice. I think that's something that queer people get to learn maybe a little sooner than some other people or really anyone of the like more marginalized identity.
For sure.
Probably learn that a little bit sooner than some other people because it's simply like some things are just not applicable to the type of life that like you actually want to live.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's, you know, a constant conversation I'm having in therapy and with my girlfriend and all of that. But I think that one thing I just, try to tell myself is that like, I'm enough and it's okay, I'm okay. And that, you know, it's kind of like it reflected in all my work too, is that most of my characters are kind of going through that journey. And so writing and creating is just very healing.
Yeah, and so healing for like, people who get to view your art too, to like experience that. So thank you for creating that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, happy to do that.
You know, as we wrap up, thank you so much for hanging out with us, but I want to give you some space to talk about any new projects you potentially want to plug or
Yeah, season two of the Lesbian Bar Project will be coming out sometime this year. And we shot an entire season in Germany, and we're exploring Flinta culture. And Flinta is an acronym. Awesome. Yeah, yeah, it's really cool. And Flinta is an acronym that translates perfectly from German to English, and it stands for female / women, lesbian, intersex, non-binary, trans, and agender. So we have an hour-long special that is going for the culture. We're really excited about that. So stay That's tuned amazing. For that. And you can follow along on Instagram at Lesbian Bar Project and lesbianbarproject.com. And then I'm personally in development for a couple other projects and trying to get my first scripted feature off the ground.
Ooh.
And if people can follow along my work, my Instagram is at EAR360.
Okay, well, make sure that's in the description so that folks know where to find you. And then that brings...
For cool. sure. One other thing we love for each episode to put in our description is a link to a playlist. Both Britt and I are inspired by music. And so we want to ask you if you have, like, what kind of music you listen to when you're trying to, like, get your creative juices flowing.
Or if you want to do it later, we can just send you the collab link.
We can collaborate on a playlist
if you're down to make one.
Awesome. Yeah, for sure. I'll add some songs to that. But I love neo soul and like soul, and then but I also like random electronic stuff, and my taste is very eclectic. And then I'll like throw in some like Janis Joplin and then like some SZA. So it's like kind of all over the map. But I'll throw in some playlist. Songs I like.
I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I'm excited too. Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us.
Yeah.
And we hope that everyone listening, go stream the Lesbian Bar Project. Watch out for season two.
Follow Erica on Instagram.
Follow us on Instagram.
Yeah, follow us.
Follow me. Feel free to reach out. I don't bite unless you want me to. And thank you so much for having me on.
Oh my God, it was so much fun. Thank you, Erica. Have a great night.